Welcome back to In the Studio, spotlighting brain salad surgery from Emerson, Lake & Palmer. I'm Greg Lake.
Hi, Carl Palmer here in the studio for Emerson, Lake & Palmer's Anthology.
For the musical centerpiece to brain salad surgery, Greg Lake invited lyricist Pete Sinfield from his King Crimson days to collaborate on Carn Evil 9. Here's Greg Lake.
That was what was fun about working with Pete. You know, we used to do these things and dream a lot. Which all started really in the King Crimson days, you know, and we used to really get into dreaming and scheming. I've written, it goes back to King Crimson, the Court of the Crimson King, that I've written with Pete. And we've done various things throughout ELP. I don't know, I love the way Pete writes, you know, I've enjoyed working, he's a great lyricist. It was just a comfortable, natural thing to do. I've learnt a tremendous amount from him. And it just fitted at the time, you know. We came up with these concepts. This Carn Evil 9 thing was basically about computers, the way computers take people over. In fact, there was a lot of foresight in that, now I come to think of it. And although computers weren't new at that time, the extent to which they have become dominant throughout society was something that, I must say, that we foresaw at that time. And I think the line was, load your program, I am yourself. So that was, I think there was a degree of foresight in that.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
And he dies. Come on.
But it turns out that the show that never ends, my friends, indeed did close in March 2016 with the sudden death of Keith Emerson. The Emerson, Lake & Palmer keyboard maestro had been struggling with a repetitive stress issue in his right hand for almost 20 years, so debilitating to his keyboard playing that Keith had what professional baseball pitchers call Tommy John surgery to replace the motor nerve in his right forearm. Here's lifelong friend Carl Palmer.
Let me preface this. The reason why I want to talk about Keith and circumstances is because my concern is there was a lot of focus initially when he passed about the way he died rather than the way he lived.
Yes.
I would like to hear from you what the plans were. Were you in communication? What was your relationship?
Okay, so if we go right back to when the problem started with Keith's hand, I was the one that drove him to hospital that morning. To UCLA, mid-97 or something.
Oh, it was that long ago.
Yeah, and no, the operation was old by now. And said, you know, why don't we have a second opinion? Keith was a little bit of a hypochondriac and wanted to get it sorted out straight away. He'd seen a couple of specialists in Los Angeles. And to be perfectly honest, not to put down the medical profession in this country, I said, why don't we go home and ask someone there as well? I said, what's wrong with having a three-way road here to this?
Not a bad suggestion
anyway,
at all.
I said, we could just drive to the airport, we can buy some tickets, and I'll come back with you. He didn't want to do that. He said, no, drop me off at the door, Carl, and I'll see you later tonight. So he had the operation, and he finished the album with one hand, you know. He played all the parts with one hand because he had a terrific left hand. And the operation lasted about 19 years. The problem was, on his right hand, the two little fingers used to curl under after about 40 minutes, 50 minutes of playing. Wow. It was to do with the ulnar nerve or some nerve in the elbow when you bang. It was transplanted to his forearm, and basically, he knows himself that possibly, you know, he needn't have had such a severe operation, but he did. And we were in communication right up until we played 2010, 25th of July, High Voltage, which was one of the first prog rock festivals. That got recorded. That took 5 weeks of rehearsal, and that was a problem for me because I realized then that we couldn't produce. I have a very simple philosophy, you know, and this is for me. I will always play as long as I can maintain my standard, and I apply that to any band. If we can improve, then that's really what I want. If we can't maintain and we can't improve and we go below the line, then we have to stop. Because I believe that the public know exactly where you are and what you do, and I never ever want to fool them because I believe, you know, people know. So it was okay to do the last concert in 2010 for nostalgia. It took 5 weeks to learn a lot of the music, which we've been playing for 40 years, more or less.
You have to relearn some of that
stuff. I know we'd only played together for 16 years and they weren't consecutive, but it's over a 40-year period and we'd written a lot of the stuff ourselves. But what happened was a lot of the music had to be put onto a sequencer that Keith would find difficult playing, or we'd try and improve it by using a sequencer anyway. It could have gone both ways, but it took a long time. And I noticed that the standard we reached really wasn't where we left off. So I was happy to do the show from a nostalgic point of view, but not happy to carry on. And of course, within a week of doing that, I did have to let everyone know. Keith understood immediately. He's an extreme realist. He knew that the game was up, you know, and I tried to say it as nicely as possible. He got it. Greg Lake was a little bit bitter. And we didn't speak to each other for a year and a half or whatever.
Wasn't the first time.
And that was okay. He eventually got it. Because the problem was we could have gone around the world and said goodbye to everybody, but we couldn't take 3 or 4 days off and then play a gig because the band always needed to keep rehearsing on days off. And we couldn't do that. You know, it's just practically impossible to move and rehearse. So I realized that logistically on what we had left, that it was a one time and we best do it in our homeland and say goodbye to all of the people in the UK who gave us our start. Unfortunately, the country that made us America, which made the band, you know, global, you know, we couldn't really come here and play because it just wouldn't have worked, because we couldn't play four or five nights in a row. We couldn't play three, two at the very, very most. I wanted to augment the band, but that didn't go down very well. And I said it was an industry standard now. We could do this. Keith was up for that. Greg wasn't. So there wasn't a way out. So the drawbridge had to come down, and it did. It was a shame that in 2010, unfortunately, I had to end it because somebody had to step up and say. And we only started to fall apart when we started making albums at the very end, like In the Hot Seat and Black Moon. Those were just too poppy, and they weren't deep enough, you know. Keith Emerson, whilst the band was never going to play again, we had talked about Keith playing with me on this tour for one or two concerts. And the program that I am playing is stuff that I actually, a program I put together with him. He wanted to go to Japan with his group, first of all, as he announced and made reference on YouTube. And then he was going to come back and he was going to pick a concert and say he was going to come and play two or three songs. He might have played two concerts, one for sure, and that was it. So we'd actually, I'd actually spoken to him about 3 weeks before he died. Mm. And I think we had emails within about 10 days. So that's where that was. So it was a case of Keith wanted to sort of play. It just had to be set up in the right way. I didn't think another reformation, you know, of the another reforming was going to ever be on, because it wouldn't work. But for him to come on and play a few solos and enjoy that aspect of it without the responsibility of being the lead instrument all of the time, he could have dealt with. So that was a shame. So he would have probably picked a concert from my itinerary that was closest to his front door, knowing Keith, but hey, I don't mind. But that, sadly, that's not going to happen. But
I think it's wonderful that you gave him that opportunity.
Yeah, no, and he wanted that, it, and he was fine.
Carte blanche.
Keith Emerson never really fell out or had any sort of problems with me when I decided to do what I did. Greg had more problems with it. But, you know, there's always somebody. But, you know, Greg's okay with that. He probably understands now.
I'm sure.
And there's not a deal there at all. And obviously I wish him well with whatever he does.
Wanna be an angel, you wanna be a star. Wanna play some magic on my guitar. Wanna be a poet, you wanna be my spring. You could be anything. Do you wanna be the lover of another? Undercover, you could even be the man on the moon. Wanna be the player? You wanna be the string? Let me tell you something. It just don't mean a thing. You see, it really doesn't matter when you're buried in disguise by the dark gloss on your eyes. Though your flesh has crystallized, still you turn me on. Still you turn me on. Lying in my bed, wanna be color cover magazine, create a scene. Every day a little sadder, a little madder. Someone get me a ladder. Wanna be the singer, wanna be the song. Let me tell you something, you just couldn't be more wrong. You see, I really have to tell you that it all gets so intense. From my experience, it just doesn't seem to make sense. Thank you.
Still You Turn Me On from Emerson, Lake & Palmer was originally on Brain Salad Surgery, and it's now a part of Emerson, Lake & Palmer, the anthology, 1970 to 1998. It's a career-spanning 3-CD collection available now at Amazon.com. Carl Palmer.
What is your citizenship? Do you have dual citizenship?
No, I've always, I'm a European. I look like an American and I work here a lot, but no, I'm...
Where do you live?
I live in England. In actual fact, I divide my time between Cyprus and England. Oops. I live in England maybe 3-4 months of the year. The rest of the time I'm touring or I'm in Cyprus.
Very good. America has less than 6 months to learn from Brexit.
Yes.
What should we know that you are finding out that you know now,
yes,
that you would like to impart?
Well, for us, for me, Brexit is a complete disaster, really.
Because, why?
Well, you have to look at the younger people of our country. We opened up all the doors throughout Europe, which gave equal opportunity, which meant, you know, people could travel and people could go to countries and refugees, and you'd have that problem. But at the end of the day, now our younger people, younger professionals in the country will be restricted on where they can work and how they can work, because jobs will be given to people that are in the EU. So they'll have a harder time getting around, trading, dealing. It will be definitely harder on the stock exchange. We've already noticed that the difference between the dollar and the pound, it used to be 157 to the pound. Now it's 130, which means trading is going to be more expensive between the two countries. We produce quite a lot in England still, which is nice. Not as much as Germany. Germany manufactures more than anyone else in Europe and is the strongest economy, and obviously is still in the European market. So for us, we are going to see, I think, before we're completely out and all the paperwork's done, it's about 2 years. But during that time, there'll be lots of legal stuff, ramifications, which will be looked at and dealt with and put into place. But it's going to be ugly and it's not going to work. There's still a chance that something might happen. I think it's Section 50 or 51 or whatever. I'm not completely sure. But something has to be signed off on. And we were wanting to exit sometime in September, but the European Committee wanted it done straight away. They wanted the cleanup done immediately. So it's probably not going to be reversible.
Really?
And I think what we've got now, I mean, there are countries which aren't in the European Union which do incredibly well too, but you know, it takes time to get back on your feet again. Don't forget, they want a referendum in Scotland. So if they had a referendum in Scotland to leave the United Kingdom, then that would be a problem, because there'd be another currency have to go in place, and then the country would be divided. Be a bit like Texas always wanted to be on its own at some stage.
Not all of Texas, just the loudmouth.
Just the loudmouth. Yeah. Okay. Well, we have more than loudmouths in Scotland. They are very, very keen. They've never wanted to leave. The majority has been on not leaving, and it still is that way today. And there could be a referendum in the next couple of months. Who knows?
How, in practical terms, or is it too soon to tell how the Brexit changes, leaving the EU for the UK, is going to affect you in practical terms of touring the continent or continuing to live in Cyprus?
That won't have a problem there, because I don't rely on any sort of local sort of
health professional?
Well, going through, there'll be borders, you see. So before, there wasn't any borders with these countries. If you were part of the EU, you could just drive through
it's
Germany,
like states in America,
into Austria, into Germany, into Italy.
The same way we
exactly
cross into states.
So that will change. That will change, unless there's something put into place, because we've got, you know, English passports or whatever, we'll still be allowed to do that, as long as we're not importing or exporting. If we're just driving through on holiday or driving through with a carnet, like a group would be, saying this is our equipment, this is all the numbers, these are the serial numbers, this is what we're doing, here are the contracts, that might not change. Obviously, withholding taxes in certain countries will change and be different. Still, they'll be able to be offset against whatever you're pulling in back home. There isn't the admin in place yet. So to say what you know, the outcome is going to be slightly premature because we're not sure. We're not sure. All I can tell you is that the administration is going to be so costly in just reversing it and resetting it so it does work, not just for musicians, but just for all companies. It's going to be quite wild. It's going to be so expensive. We have a budget airline called EasyJet who have already moved their offices from Luton Airport, which is an airport not far from my home in the UK, and they've moved it into a European country like Holland or whatever.
Already,
because they've had to, and that was like 800 jobs. So it's quite severe, yeah. It is severe.
I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this.